Would you just buy yourself some new shirts? Neville says when he rips Draco's shirt open at the shoulder seam while they're kissing on the couch. It was fine this morning, Draco says, even though he learned how to spell stitch mostly to fix the tears in his clothes. He knows he looks shabby, but he never goes anywhere where he needs to look especially nice. Potter seems to constantly wear trousers torn at the knee, and half of Neville's shirts have little splatters of holes from caustic potion ingredients. So he hadn't thought it mattered much. No, it wasn't, Neville says. You have 3 pairs of trousers and 2 robes, and people will think I'm mean with you. What do you care what they think? I don't care, but I wish you would buy yourself some things, Neville says. You used to like things. Yeah, sure, Draco says lightly. That was me. Don't, Neville says. Don't what? Don't act like I think you're after money. Everyone else does. Name 1 person who thinks that, Neville says. No one thinks that. They think you're in... His voice shakes, and he says, I know you married me to get away from your father, and I know it's embarrassing and lonely for you, and I'm sorry, but will you just buy yourself some clothes? Draco pushes himself back. I guess you just know all about it, he says. I know, Neville says. I just thought maybe there was some way I could make things better for you. Things are fine, Draco says. But Neville hesitates and then says in a rush, There's a class starting up on potion design. You're so good at inventing new recipes. I got you a brochure and... No newts, remember? Draco says. I know the professor. I could talk to her for you. But I like what I'm doing now, Draco says. I know you and all your friends are the best and the smartest, but I'm not. That's not true. Which part? Draco, Neville says. Don't you want... No, I don't. I don't believe you. You didn't buy the right to control everything I think or want, Draco says. He shakes his wand into his palm, pinches the seam of his shirt together, and starts to spell the seam closed. The threads knit together reluctantly, but Draco is so grateful to have something to do that he doesn't even mind doing magic in front of Neville. No, I know that, Neville says, looking perplexed. I don't... Why do you get like this? Like what? Like you're angry at me for suggesting that anything you do might have some kind of worth, Neville says. Well, I do all right in the bedroom. And then you make it all about sex and I get distracted. I never noticed you having a problem with that before. Okay, Neville says. Okay, then. He touches Draco's cheek, gently, gently, and pulls him back down into a kiss. Draco slides his hands underneath Neville's t-shirt, and Neville lifts his arms and lets Draco pull it off. Shortly after, there's an odd little trickle of owls and calls on the portiflue. Harry Potter mentioned you might be able to make 25 cupcakes for my niece's upcoming birthday, they say. Or, I wonder if you would be available to make a strawberry pavlova for my wife's retirement party. Draco says yes because he honestly doesn't have anything better to do, because he's never made a pavlova before and wants to learn how, because Weasley apparently promised a 10-year-old that Draco could make a cake shaped like a Quidditch pitch, with chocolate brownie bludgers and quaffles and a lemon snitch. Draco blows his magic for the day, making them zoom around the cake, and has to do the dishes by hand. He uses the money to buy butter and eggs for the next cake, and a set of nesting springform pans he finds at a second-hand store. Then he gives up and writes out a list of cake flavors and fillings and suggested combinations because he's tired of having to list them out for people who invariably squint and say things like, "Wait, chocolate or hazelnut or lemon or..." While Draco worries that his batch of Madeleines to be taken home by the mourners for old Granny Mickelson's funeral are burning. Draco allows himself to be cautiously happy at the honest enjoyment people seem to get from his cooking, at the steadily growing little stack of galleons he keeps in one of the biscuit tins in a lower cupboard, at the way Neville smiles at him when they're having sex, until, cleaning, he sees Neville's appointment calendar. It's a serious little black book, scribbled over with Neville's blocky script, classes and training, appointments with the medi-wizard he sees about his headaches, long meetings blocked off for his solicitors and money managers, and nearly once a fortnight for the next year, reminders to buy flowers for Draco, lined up neatly with his other chores and responsibilities. There isn't a single dinner or social engagement that isn't about work or duty. Neville apparently doesn't write those down. Draco tries to believe it doesn't mean anything, and then he tries not to care, but of course he does, a sad, sick feeling that it takes him too long to identify and makes him scrub the house from top to bottom, learn 17 new recipes, and reinforce all the elbows on Neville's robes. It's guilt, because Neville is a nice person and he deserves better. He's a war hero, and he's unbelievably easy on the eyes, and he could have had anyone he wanted, and now he's gritting his teeth and making the best of it and buying flowers. "Look," Neville says when he finds Draco on his hands and knees, scrubbing at the baseboards with a stiff brush. "Did I do something?" "No," Draco says. He drops the brush back into the bucket and stands, wiping his hands on a towel. "Are you positive?" Neville says with exaggerated patience. "Maybe we should get that divorce."
"What?"
"If you want."
"I thought the shame would destroy your life," Neville says, smiling a little.
"Maybe it's better than being reminded at every turn that you had to marry me," Draco says, and carries the bucket back into the kitchen, dumps the gray water down the drain, and refills it.
"I don't do that," Neville says, following him. "Why don't you tell me what this is really about?"
"It's not fair," Draco says. "For you."
"Draco,
do you think just because I let you fuck me that I love you?" Draco says. He's overfilled the new bucket and slops half of it on the kitchen floor when he drags it out of the sink and back into the living room.
"No," Neville says.
"No, I don't." "So once you graduate and get your first posting, we can get a divorce," Draco says.
"Sounds great," Neville says. "I have to study now."
"Okay. And I would really appreciate it," Neville continues, "if you could just go away."
"Oh, I, well..."
"Is that so hard for you to understand?" Neville says. "Since you can't wait to get away from me, why don't you just get out now so I can study in peace?" He grabs his books and goes into the kitchen. Draco packs his valise quickly, hands shaking, and closes the door quietly after himself when he leaves. He isn't entirely certain where to go. He walks blindly at first, just trying to get as far away as possible. And when he becomes aware of his surroundings, he sees he's practically on campus. There's a little cafe Neville took him to once, just a few blocks away, and he's walking there, with a vague idea of finding somewhere he can sit down and have a cup of tea and figure out what to do, when he nearly walks into Ron Weasley.
"Excuse me," he says, and moves around him.
"Hey," Weasley says.
"Hey, Draco, are you all right?"
"I'm fine," Draco says.
Yeah, I can tell, Weasley says, and then makes Draco come back to the flat he shares with Potter. It's a little messy, Weasley says cheerfully, scooping some laundry off the couch and throwing it onto a chair. Sit down. There's a pyramid made of old Madge's ale cans stacked up on the mantelpiece, a mishmash of brooms and dueling swords propped up in the corner, and what Draco can only assume is a stolen traffic sign. Caution, portkey point. Hung up on the wall. The coffee table is strewn with Quidditch magazines and textbooks, potions ingredients in clear plastic packets, a tin of broom bristle conditioner and several greasy rags, a half-empty box of owl snacks, and a mismatched pair of gauntlets. Can I get you something? Weasley says.
No, thank you,
Draco says, sitting down a little gingerly on the couch. But Weasley ignores him and makes him a cup of tea, which Draco is dutifully drinking when Potter slams in the door. He throws down his rucksack, tosses his robe over the armchair, summons a bottle of ale from the refrigerator, pops the cap with an inaudible pervito, and takes a swig before turning around and seeing Draco. Hey, he says.
Well, this was nice, Draco says, putting down the teacup with a clatter. I should probably...
He trails off because Potter's just staring at him while he takes a few long pulls on his ale.
Would you like a drink? He says finally.
Yes, please.
Draco has two ales. Potter has another two, and Weasley has four. And then they flew up some takeaway and have another round apiece. Potter and Weasley tell him funny stories about training exercises gone wrong and describe a series of increasingly improbable Quidditch plays they've invented. Draco has another ale and then falls asleep on the couch, head pillowed on unfolded laundry. He wakes up with a Quidditch cloak on top of him and Neville sitting in the armchair opposite, fiddling with his wand, silent.
What?
Draco says, struggling out of sleep. His mouth tastes fuzzy and dank.
Did Harry and Ron call you?
No, Neville bites out. They didn't. When it became apparent that you hadn't slept in your bed last night, I had to spell locate you.
How
do you think? Neville says. By the way, blood magic isn't my favorite thing to do first thing in the morning.
Your breakfast, Draco says.
Screw my breakfast, Neville says angrily. There's a handkerchief wrapped clumsily around his hand. I thought you were abducted or raped or dead or something.
Well, I'm not.
So I see.
You wanted me out, Draco says, yanking himself upright and shaking out his robes. I got out.
I just meant I needed a little quiet to study, Neville says. I didn't mean get hornswoggled with Harry and Ron, and I sincerely hope you didn't try to keep up with them.
I didn't.
Hollow Leg and Ron has 3 stone on you.
I've been drinking since I was 13.
What are you even doing sleeping here anyhow? Neville says.
Oi, Harry calls from down the hall, thumping into the bathroom. Mind keeping the lover's spat down a little? Some of us have a lovely hangover.
Neville goes a dull brick red and then says, in a much quieter tone,
All right, come home.
Maybe I don't want to, Draco says, but Neville's not listening.
Is that your valise?
He says, nudging aside an ale bottle with his foot.
Were you running away?
No, Draco says.
You told me to leave.
And you thought I meant what exactly?
How should I know? Draco says.
I'm doing the best I can. I know you didn't want me, and I get in the way, but you don't seem to mind eating my cooking and fucking me.
They're speaking in furious whispers, faces close together.
I told you. You don't have to do any of that.
I want to do it,
Draco says. I just wish He stops.
What?
Nothing, Draco says. Let's go.
The kitchen is destroyed, a charred bow of rosemary in the sink, blood droplets splattered across the floor and all over Draco's counter. The spice jars rifled through and overturned, Draco's hairbrush covered in sooty fingerprints. The mess, not to mention the fact that Neville isn't wearing socks, speaks of haste, perhaps even panic.
Abducted, really? Draco says.
Oh, right. It's so insane to think someone might try to kidnap Lucius Malfoy's beautiful only son, who also married... to me, a guy no one holds a grudge against for helping to fuck up their stupid pureblood evil think tank.
Yeah, what was I thinking? Neville says, which is possibly the longest sentence he's ever said to Draco.
Beautiful, Draco says. I have to get to class, Neville says. You know what you look like.
About what I said, Draco says. They've been very careful with each other for almost 2 weeks, with Neville home for dinner every night and sitting at the table at breakfast, as though the only way they know how to apologize is for Draco to cook and for Neville to eat and smile and have seconds. Neville has asked Draco to help him copy over another paper and accepted a set of flashcards Draco made for his potions midterm, and Draco has bought himself a new sweater and some novels and a set of 10 milky glass nesting bowls, the largest big enough to rise 4 loaves of bread in, and the smallest barely large enough for a single egg yolk, just to show Neville he's not angry anymore.
You said a lot of things, Neville says, accepting a new stack of griddle cakes, this time studded with tiny wild blueberries.
It's not that I want a divorce, Draco says when he's tipped some griddle cakes onto his plate and sat down opposite Neville. I just meant that if you want one, if there's ever someone else.
What about you? Neville says. He's cutting his griddle cakes into perfect strips, staring down.
Oh, I don't think... I don't really...
You could, Neville says. You're so...
He puts down his fork and then reaches across the table to touch a lock of Draco's hair, his fingers grazing Draco's collarbone.
You've been with other...
Draco begins, and Neville drops his hand and says,
Yes.
Were you involved with someone when we... When we got married?
Draco says. He hadn't ever thought to ask.
No, Neville says.
Oh, well, that's good, Draco says, trying to smile, but the moment's over.
Neville studies all the time. Draco finds him slumped over books at his desk on Saturday mornings, and he spends most Sunday afternoons hunched over one term paper or another, muttering to himself and making huge ink splotches. Draco knows that Harry and Ron both play on the Academy intramural Quidditch team and in a weekend pickup league, that they devote a not inconsiderable amount of time to drinking and going out and meeting girls, that Ron has been known to start papers the day before they're due, but when he mentions as much to Neville, who is coming down with a cold and should be tucked into bed with a pot of ginger tea, Neville says,
Well, Harry and Ron, he grimaces. You may not have noticed, but I was never the strongest academically.
But you're powerful, Draco says.
The spells Neville does around the house are not particularly complex, heating up the kettle, finding a missing sock. But the execution is quick and clean, with the kind of precision that's only built out of practice at restraining magic. Neville's power wants to act, so unlike the sluggish, sloppy spells Draco casts, where there's no need to rein in the magic to avoid breaking the windows or summon every sock in the house. Everyone in the program is powerful, Neville says. I'm nothing special.
Are you failing?
No, Neville says, because I study.
You need to rest, Draco says.
I need to finish the reading, Neville says.
What does it matter if you don't?
I want to be an Auror, Neville says, and I don't want anyone to say it's just because I know Harry or what happened to my parents.
You can't make people stop talking shit about you by studying, Draco says.
Yes, thanks, I'm aware of that, Neville snaps. And, by the way, Ron dates girls.
Yes, Draco says, starting to wonder if Neville's running a fever.
I know.
Okay, then, Neville mumbles, seeming to feel like something's settled. He turns back to his desk. Draco sighs and goes to make a pot of ginger tea. Neville's coughing restlessly by the time he's back, hunched over his notes, nose red.
I could quiz you, maybe, Draco offers, fully expecting Neville to say no, but Neville takes the mug of tea Draco gives him and says,
Okay, if you don't mind.
I know, Draco says. I'm happy to help.
He thinks it'll all be over his head and make him feel nervous and ignorant, and it's true that he doesn't get more than half of it, but Neville's so intent on the answers that he doesn't notice. After an hour, he starts to droop, noticeably, and Draco convinces him to strip down to his drawers, open the converto couch, and get under the covers, and later, when Neville falls asleep, pries the book out of Neville's hands and drapes an extra blanket over him. Of course Draco catches it and wakes up the day after Neville's exam with a scratchy throat that deepens into a bronchial cough by the time Neville gets home.
What do you think you're doing? Neville says, catching him bumbling around the kitchen, and bundles him into bed before Draco properly knows what's happening.
I'm fine. I can make you something, Draco protests.
You're not fine. You look like flubberworm bait. And I am perfectly capable of cooking my own dinner, Neville says, conjuring an extra pillow and tucking it behind Draco's head. He leans down and puts the back of his hand on Draco's forehead. His skin is cool and dry, and his knuckles are knobbly and faintly scratchy. Draco can remember his mother touching him like this a time or two, when he was very small.
You feel hot, Neville informs him, and then leans down a little closer and takes a hard look at Draco's face.
Tell me you ate today, he says. Draco shakes his head. Neville sighs.
My throat hurt, Draco says.
Neville nods and then gets up and goes into the kitchen for a while. Draco closes his eyes, hopes Neville isn't destroying his pantry. Maybe he dozes a little because Neville's back in the next second, carrying a tray with a vanilla milkshake, with some hot broth and noodles, and a cool washcloth he swipes across Draco's forehead and the palms of his hands.
Don't look so surprised, he says, grinning at Draco's expression at the first sip of milkshake.
I know it's not up to your standards, but I won't say it doesn't pain me a little that you honestly doubt my ability to make a milkshake.
It's just, I never saw you make anything.
I wasn't so into family meals at the time, Neville says, sprawling back on the bed and watching Draco take a spoonful of broth.
And you are now?
Yeah, I am, Neville says, almost defiantly. That okay?
Yes, yes,
Draco says, shoving his spoon in his mouth so he doesn't have to say anything else. Neville starts taking him along to the odd house party or barbecue. They're usually not very entertaining because Draco doesn't know anyone, and Neville divides his time between lurking around looking uncomfortable and disappearing for long stretches of time into another room, but he exerts himself to be friendly for Neville's sake.
Oh, you're Neville's husband, people always say.
Once a round-faced witch buttonholes him near the punch bowl and says,
Neville's quite lovely, isn't he?
I noted him particularly at convocation because he was so much better looking in person than in all the newspaper photographs. None of us had any idea he even had a sweetheart.
Is that so? Draco says weakly, looking around for some place to hide.
After a solid month of losing at least one weekend afternoon to insipid conversation and unappetizing food, Draco catches Neville coming out of a spare room looking guilty.
What are you?
Draco catches sight of the sheaf of papers Neville's trying to stuff under his robes and says,
Were you revising?
No, Neville says. Okay, yes, a little. But I have an exam on Monday.
Why did we even come then?
I thought you'd like it, Neville says.
Is that the reason we've been attending so many buffets and high teas with people you apparently barely know?
Neville shrugs, which means yes.
It's not that I don't appreciate the thought, Draco says, but I had planned to spend the afternoon experimenting with some pancakes to keep you alert after you've been up all night revising. Infusing the milk with chili powder is looking very promising.
Sounds delicious, Neville says dubiously.
I call them wide-awake hotcakes, Draco says, but mostly it's the taste that wakes you up right now.
So we can go? Neville says, barely bothering to disguise his eagerness. After that, their social engagements dwindle back to Harry and Ron, and sometimes they bring along Granger, or she comes by herself.
Are you all right? She asks him once, quickly.
Neville's in the kitchen making tea, and Granger's face is serious, stopping him by putting two fingers very lightly on the back of his wrist.
Very well, thanks, Draco says. Did Neville mention that I had been ill?
No, he didn't. I just thought you might, she hesitates. Anyhow, you're well?
Yes, Draco says, and she nods and takes another slice of candied ginger and asks about the new improvements to Draco's concentration cupcakes.
Cheating, Neville says, coming back in and distributing the mugs of tea.
The ingredients are all perfectly legal, separately and in combination, Draco says, taking a sip. Although I will concede that the fudge frosting is very tasty.
Could you bake me up a box when you have time? Granger says. We're working on some rather tricky experimental spells in the lab, and I think the cupcakes kept us from breaking quite as many windows last time.
Don't encourage him, Neville says.
Someone has to, Granger says tartly. Neville looks at the floor.
Didn't I give you the recipe? Draco says. I can copy it out again for you.
But mine don't taste like yours.
Don't tell me you can't follow a simple recipe. How do they taste?
Gritty, Granger says. Sour.
You must not have emulsified the milk, Thistle, properly.
I can expense it, Granger says plaintively. What's the going rate?
Do you want to?
Neville rolls up on one elbow and runs a hand slowly down Draco's side.
I don't follow, Draco says. He punches his pillow into a better shape and pulls the blanket up to his chin.
Is there something you'd like? Neville says. Something we don't do?
Why? Draco says cautiously.
You seemed angry about it that time, Neville says. He gets a little talkative sometimes after they fuck.
That's new.
No, Draco says. You always... That is, I don't mind letting you choose. That's how we always did it before.
Before, when Neville would sneak into the dungeons and push Draco's robes up over his knees and ask if he could do something Draco had never even heard of.
I was 16.
So was I.
And a selfish idiot, Neville says, rolling back and letting his head fall against the pillow with an audible slap.
I don't... what?
I hate what I did to you, Neville blurts out. He's still staring at the ceiling, so Draco has to turn on his side to see his face.
What I took from you because I just wanted to stick it in with no thought of what it might mean for...
No, Draco says. I wanted to. It was my idea.
I knew it was wrong, but I did it anyway because I had no self-control, and now you're just...
Neville stops talking for so long that Draco thinks he's not going to say anything more before he takes a quick breath and says,
Stuck.
I rather thought you were stuck with me.
But I like having you around, Neville says. I still have kind of a thing for you, and you're right. I do like eating your cooking and having sex with you, and you keep helping me with school and fixing my career.
When was it that you had a thing for me?
Neville gets a little still. Before.
When you had no self-discipline.
Yes, Neville says. He smiles up at Draco, lopsided, a little lustful.
Lucius, Draco says, was going to marry me to some... Oh, I don't know, but he needed a virgin, so he was probably going to do something horrible to me.
The smile drops off Neville's face.
What?
When was it that you got the idea that I was going to be allowed to do anything but make an advantageous marriage for Lucius? Which I did, by the way.
Neville stares at him, his mouth a thin, angry line.
I fucking hate your family, he says. I mean, no offense, but your dad is a jerk.
He sued you for raping me, and you're just figuring this out now?
I thought he was just looking out for you, Neville said. I thought that was commendable, even if he had to go about it in the nastiest way possible.
Spring comes early. Draco finds himself restless, his skin too small, and starts digging up the garden in the back. The ground is hard-packed and the weeds are wild knots of roots, locked against each other beneath the ground. It takes Draco a week of work to clear a patch big enough for the cabbage and mugwort, strawberry, snap peas, thistle, and thyme he plants, which then immediately start to die.
You know, Neville says when he finds Draco in the back, disconsolately digging up the mugwort, whose roots are black with rot.
You could have asked for help.
I can figure it out, Draco says. You're busy, it's midterms.
Yeah, but... What, are you some kind of herbology superstar? Draco says, straightening up.
Neville shrugs, and then, to Draco's surprise, starts to blush.
Oh, right, of course you are, Draco says. I don't suppose you have any other talents I should know about. Can you play the trombone? Do you hold the school record for the most pull-ups in a 5-minute time trial?
It was 10 minutes, Neville says, ducking his head, and then he comes down off the porch and takes the shovel out of Draco's hand and explains that thistle and mugwort can't be in the same plot and that the strawberries aren't getting enough sun and the thyme too much. The thistle is a wash, but together they manage to salvage more of the cabbage and snap peas, and then they get ambitious and dig up the rest of the garden, planning on a real vegetable garden with a herb and potions ingredient border. And Ron and Harry show up right around sundown with a huge bottle of gin they appear to have purchased solely because it has a witch in her knickers on it, and they all sit out on the back porch and drink gin and tonics and stare at the garden.
That was fun, Draco says, later, when Ron and Harry have gone home and they're still a little tipsy and eating icebox cake straight out of the dish, leaning against the counter in the kitchen.
Thank you.
Of course, Neville says. He licks melted ice cream off his knuckles. Any time. Lucius stops by just before 6 on a Friday, just after Draco has put the tureen of lamb and vegetable stew and a basket of crusty rolls on the sideboard and set the keep warm spell. Harry and Ron and Granger are coming for dinner, and Draco is standing in the kitchen, holding a dish towel, just about to put together some radish bites and fig and gorgonzola crackers and chop some salad and check on the rhubarb Betty in the oven, when Lucius knocks and saunters in without waiting for a response.
"It's traditional to wait for someone to invite you in," Draco says.
"Now, now," Lucius says. "No need to be unpleasant."
"You should have owled," Draco says tightly. "I'm expecting guests."
"I won't take up too much of your time, then," Lucius says. "I was only going to compliment you on what an accomplished little helpmeet you seem to have grown into. I had no idea Longbottom was capable of whipping you into shape, let alone having you tend to his every whim with evident enthusiasm."
"Biscuit?" Draco says blandly, flipping the lid off his latest assortment. Lucius's eyebrow twitches up, but he selects a jam jewel, pinching it disdainfully between his thumb and forefinger. It's buttery, but delicate, not too sweet, as a counterpoint to the vivid punch of raspberry jam. Lucius's face twitches as he eats it, trying to think of something suitably condescending to say, and, for once, failing.
"What do you want?" Draco says.
"Oh, just a little legal matter," Lucius says. "Some papers I thought you might sign for me."
"What kind of papers?"
"They concern your mother's estate," Lucius says, producing a sheaf of parchment and a ready ink quill.
"Leave it, and I'll read through it," Draco says.
"I would really rather prefer if you would sign now. It's a trivial matter, I assure you."
"I'm not signing anything," Draco says. He glances up at the clock, which is a mistake. Lucius gives him a sly smile, no doubt meant to be friendly.
"I suppose you have a choice to make, then," he says.
"What's that?"
"You can sign," Lucius says, "and I'll be on my way with no need to bother you again. Or I can release the details of your marriage settlement to the papers. I imagine you know that rape is frowned upon by the DMLE.
"Neville didn't rape me," Draco says.
"Not according to the papers he signed," Lucius says, winking. "But what do you suppose I received the settlement for if he didn't admit to it? And of course I kept a few photographs. Poor thing, you were so listless after the brutal attack, broken and beaten."
"Now you're just making things up," Draco says.
Lucius shrugged. "Oh, well, in that case, I'm sure he'll get it all straightened out in no time. The rumors will die right down. It's just so difficult to believe, even after you've seen the photographs. Shame you've always bruised so badly."
Draco punches him. Lucius looks so astonished that it almost makes Draco laugh, and then Lucius shoves his wand painfully up under Draco's jaw and sucker punches him right into the middle of a crucio.
"Your loyalty is touching," Lucius says when he ends it, while Draco is pushing himself unsteadily up off the floor to his hands and knees, breathing deeply to keep from vomiting.
"Tell me, does he share the same tender feelings?"
"Ah, so sorry to bring up a delicate subject."
"No, you're not," Draco says, and Lucius kicks him casually in the ribs a few times.
"Just when I think you couldn't possibly be more of a disappointment, you always manage to surprise me,"
Lucius says, kicking him again, meditatively, and eating another jam jewel.
"It would be one thing if you'd chosen to demean yourself as a scullery slave as a means to an end, but it's clear that you enjoy it, that you care for Longbottom, darning his socks, tending to his other needs."
So what if I do? Draco spits. There's blood in his mouth where he bit his tongue. It's better than what I would have ended up doing with Lord What's-His-Name.
You're insolent.
Lucius puts his boot on Draco's head, punctuating each word with a nudge of his heel against Draco's cheek.
Disloyal, sluttish, and none too bright.
There's a rush of footsteps, and Lucius's voice cuts off suddenly. When Draco opens his eyes, Neville is dragging Lucius across the kitchen by the scruff of his neck.
Watch out, Draco croaks, and Neville throws Lucius up against the wall,
one big hand covering his mouth. Then he does something complicated with his elbow, and Lucius's wand falls out of his hand. Lucius turns purple.
I'll have you up on charges, he sputters.
Great, Neville says, because I'm going to fucking kill you if you're not out of my house in the next 10 seconds.
Is that so?
Lucius says, but he's moving pretty quickly, scooping up his wand and the documents from the kitchen table.
Draco, Neville says. I'm fine,
Draco says, but he needs Neville's hand under his elbow to stand. The kitchen floor weaves dizzily in front of him, and when his vision clears, he sees Lucius lifting his wand, his lips twisting malevolently.
There's no time.
Draco yanks Neville's wand out of his sleeve and throws himself into curse line, shouting the first thing that comes to mind, which is the dishwashing spell. There's an odd little silence when Draco feels like an idiot. And then the cookpot soaking in the sink flies across the counter and upends over Lucius's head with a dull thunk, covering him with greasy water and suds and little bits of minced carrot and onion and celery. Almost simultaneously, Lucius begins to glow, leaking yellow vapor. The light gets so bright that Draco thinks he'll go blind, and then he's falling back into Neville, and the last thing he hears is Neville saying, in an increasingly urgent tone of voice,
Draco! Draco!
He wakes up on the Converto couch. Ron is sitting in the easy chair, one ankle tossed up on the bed, reading the scandalous novel Neville got him for Christmas, and Harry is lying on the floor flipping through the flashcard file Draco made for Neville. Granger is sitting cross-legged, leaning against the chair, reading. They're sharing a pot of tea, and all of them are eating cupcakes.
Oh, hey, Ron says.
Hi,
Draco says. You've been out for a while, Ron says, summoning a glass of water and handing it to him. There's a smear of frosting on his chin.
So, Harry says, sitting up.
I just fell, Draco says hurriedly. I guess I just hit my head. Idiotic. I'm always doing, you know, idiotic things.
Yeah, Harry says, his brows pulling together. He looks a little concerned. Do you remember what happened?
I fell.
We got here in time to pull Neville off your dad, Ron says reassuringly. So, no need to lie.
Your dad stole your magic, Harry says, finishing his cupcake in one huge bite and picking up another from the plate on the floor.
Then Neville says you cursed him, and I guess that destabilized the spell he was using to hold on to it, and it all went back into you.
And soap bubbles came out of his ears for some reason. Granger huffs a little and starts to say something, and Harry tucks the cupcake into her mouth before she can.
That's the short, non-boring magical theory version, anyhow, Harry says.
Oh, Draco says. You're supposed to keep off your feet until the specialist gets here, Ron says.
Neville? Draco says. His voice is horrifyingly weak. He went into the bedroom to talk on the portaflu so he wouldn't bother you, Granger says. And, by the way, I knew you had magic fatigue. It was so, so obvious. And Craig says you've been like that as long as he's known you, and it only got worse and worse every year, and also,
You should really not sign this document Lucius left.
Greg? Ron says, as Draco realizes he can hear Neville indistinctly in the next room, his voice loud and extra brassed off, occasionally rising enough for Draco to pick out individual phrases like, "Don't care what it costs," and "Make that fucker wish he'd never even heard of."
"Goyle," Hermione says a little primly, "you could owl him sometime, Draco. He's convinced you're too good for him now that you're married to Neville."
"That really doesn't make any sense," Draco says.
"I know," Granger says, at the same time that Harry says, in a studiously careless tone,
"How do you know what Greg Goyle thinks?"
"He's in some of my classes, and we've had coffee a few times."
"Oh, coffee," Ron says, in a similarly strange tone.
"Yes, coffee," Granger says. "Since you two were too busy with each other, I have been having coffee sometimes with people with whom I am acquainted."
"Guys, you mean," Harry says.
"Hey, Harry and I are roommates," Ron says. "It's not that we don't want you around."
"Well, I don't like to be in the way," Granger sniffs.
"I have a question," Draco says.
They all turn towards him, faces flushed, and Granger raises her pen in a way that means she's prepared to take notes.
"Are you eating the cupcakes I made for Robbie Cattermole's 10th birthday celebration?"
"We were hungry," Ron says after a conspicuous silence.
"You were unconscious for a long time," Harry says. He's still holding half a cupcake, but he's twisting his hand to hide it.
"And they weren't marked."
"And then there are all your roughhousing injuries," Granger says loudly, waving her arms around.
"I'm sorry, Draco, but they were delicious. You two can't honestly expect me to believe these beyond ridiculous stories about how you have marks all over your neck from mock dueling or tripping over takeaway boxes."
"Actually, if you've seen their flat," Draco murmurs, but Granger is talking loudly over him, her face red.
"As though you think I can't handle it, that the two people I... Well, anyhow, it's fine if you're sleeping together. I just wish you wouldn't lie to me about it."
"But you're dating Harry," Weasley says, right as Neville comes in and says, "Just tell me you didn't eat Robbie Cattermole's birthday cupcakes."
"We'll be in the backyard," Potter says, and all but frog marches Weasley and Granger out the door.
"They ate them," Draco says.
"Oh, fuck," Neville says. "Sorry."
"Do you mind telling me what's going on?"
"Well, your father stole your magic," Neville says.
"Yes, we got that far," Draco says. "There's a specialist on the way out to examine you."
Neville picks up a few of the empty cups and plates and starts stacking them together on a side table. "Hermione says you'll probably be fine."
"That's good."
Neville collapses into the armchair next to him wearily. He's in shirt sleeves and the knuckles on his right hand are dark red and bruised.
"How are you feeling?" he says.
"Very well," Draco says, surprised to realize it's true. His left knee used to hurt, he realizes, and he had gotten so used to the pain, to a constant low-grade fatigue, that he's forgotten what it felt like to feel rested.
"Good," Neville says.
"That's good." He lifts one hand and then puts it back down, curling it over his knee.
"When you're feeling better, we can settle the terms of the separation," he says.
"What?"
"I don't want you to worry about it," Neville says. "We'll do whatever you want."
"I don't want to separate," Draco says promptly.
"Divorce," Neville says, nodding, not quite meeting Draco's eyes.
"I don't understand."
"You have your magic back," Neville says. The expression on his face is familiar from the last months,
a peculiar mix of resignation and sadness.
You knew, Draco says.
Yes, Neville says. Or, no, not about Lucius, obviously. But you almost never used magic, and you always had some flimsy excuse. I thought you were just a bit of a squib, or had late-onset magic loss.
I know what LOML is, Draco says.
I figured you needed me, Neville says, and that's why you married me. I didn't mind.
You didn't.
I'm in love with you, Neville says. He's very matter-of-fact. You don't have to say anything.
Lucius, Draco says, sitting up, alert and jittery.
Oh, shit. Lucius is going to release the settlement documents to the papers and... Sorry, I'm not sure we'll have time to stop him, but we should...
The records are sealed, Neville says. He's leaning forward now, but he doesn't look particularly worried.
And there's nothing especially damaging in them, anyhow.
But he said they were... Oh, I'm an idiot, Draco says, slumping back against the pillows.
Great.
Well, magic fatigue kind of clouds your judgment, Neville says.
Lucius clouds my judgment, Draco says grimly.
Speaking of which, what would you like to do about him? Neville says.
I can have him brought in for assault and grand larceny, or I can sue him back to the alchemical era. Probably get you Malfoy Manor if you want it.
He looks at Draco's face, and his voice changes. Or I can make it so you never have to see him again.
It's fine, Draco says. I'm fine.
You have a boot mark on your face, Neville says, lifting one hand and waving his fingers in a vague circle over his cheekbone.
So?
So you're not fine, and Lucius stole your magic, and I didn't even notice, and I was really not nice at all to you.
I did trick you into marrying me.
You didn't do shit, Neville says.
He presses the heels of his hands into his eyes and then says,
When you didn't show up for seventh year, I knew something was wrong, but I thought if I went to see you that you'd, I don't know, laugh at me, say you'd come to your senses. So I didn't do anything.
I do love you, by the way, Draco says. I wouldn't have laughed.
Neville examines Draco's face.
You don't have to say that, he says.
I mean, I suppose you're not completely unfortunate in the sack, Draco says, and Neville's anxious smile eases into something more genuine, and he lets Draco pull him down onto the converto couch right as there's a loud thump against the house from outside, the distant sound of raised voices.
And apparently, Draco continues, we don't even have the most complicated relationship of the people currently in this house.
You may change your mind when you get stronger, Neville says, leaning down to brush a kiss against Draco's throat.
I may not, Draco says.
He doesn't.
The following spring, an unassuming shingle is hung out over a small storefront a few streets over from Diagon Alley, a narrow cobblestone street with a bookshop that appears to exist primarily to provide a cozy reading spot for customers who seem to feel it might be rude to take the books home with them, and as well as a steady stream of chin rubs to the store cat, Reuben, and has nonetheless been in business for a centaur's age. A custom milliner known to have supplied Dumbledore himself, and a broom development startup that bristles with energetic wizards wearing goggles and elbow pads. The sign hangs from a wrought iron curlicue and is small enough that anyone curious about what it says would have to get close enough to see through the window into the tidy storefront, with its glass cases filled with cakes, to be bought whole or by the slice,
Biscuits, which can be mixed and matched into tins which are already dented enough to make it appear that the biscuits have arrived by owl post from someone who loves you and may be returned and refilled at 10% off. At the selection of scones and savory breads, custard tarts and pies. And finally, in a special case marked performance selection, just next to the cash register, neat stacks of cupcakes and truffles, all with sleek racing stripes in a variety of colors. The sign outside says, House Elf Work. At first, very few people even notice the store, and then there is a slight but perceptible uptick in foot traffic to the street. The bookstore is shocked to sell some books. The broommakers assign an intern the job of going across the street with everyone's orders to address the productivity problems that develop at 3 p.m. sharp, and sometimes at 11 a.m. as well. Owl order business is brisk enough that the store sets up a waiting roost area, which usually has one or two owls perched on it, taking advantage of the complimentary owl snacks. No articles appear in the newspapers or magazines about the store, but everyone knows about it anyhow. What only a few people know about is the little packages dispatched on a regular basis to the ministry with notes marked, Final Test Phase, Extends Alertness and Mental Acuity by 13 Hours, Peanut Brickle Filling, or Infection Protection Confectionery Collection. I added caramel and butterscotch creams as requested. Please keep careful records as we are still completing studies on their efficiency. Copies of records may be directed to Gregory Goyle at the Research Institute. There seems to be some strong evidence that these provide the most direct benefits if taken within minutes of the initial wound, so do please advise agents to be prompt. Once studies are completed, these will be available through the main store, which should drop the cost considerably. Yet fewer people take note of the fact that the windows of the building above the bakery are often alight long after closing time, and that, at least once a month, a few wizards arrive, ring the bell, and disappear inside, and further, that these visits coincide with the introduction of new items in the bakery below. It is an odd loose fellowship of aurors and institute research fellows, which in time swells to include two of the broom developers and a professional Quidditch player or two. Harry Potter and Ronald Weasley have moved into Hermione Granger's London flat, because Hermione is being relentlessly pursued by Severus Snape, and they need to protect her, and because Harry Potter dated a mermaid and got addicted to smoking gillyweed, and they're mounting an intervention, and also because Ron Weasley has adopted a goblin baby and is planning to raise it to be the next All England keeper, so no one takes much notice of the fact that Neville Longbottom pops by the store most nights. Maybe he does some homework, hunched over the desk Draco keeps clear for him in the corner, or Draco quizzes him while baking cakes in the row of ovens that run along the back wall, or setting some infusions to brew overnight, before they portkey home and make dinner together. Maybe Neville is learning how to cook, and Draco is preparing for his newts, and they end most days in bed, cramming in a little more reading before falling asleep. Perhaps things get a little hot and heavy, even when they're tired, but of course Draco only smiles when asked about his personal life, and Neville is too much of a gentleman to ever discuss it. The end. Thanks to everyone for listening. This has been a bit of a passion project for me. I have loved this story since it was first published years and years ago, back when I was deep, deep into Harry Potter fandom. You probably didn't know that about me because I have not actually written any fic or created any podfic in this fandom really before. But yeah, Harry Potter. Oh, miss Harry Potter fandom so much. And I am squeeing a little to finally finish this podfic, which took longer than I had planned, and to share it with you all. And man, I hope you love this story as much as I love it.